Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Presenting Pixie Dust. I'm Elizabeth Carr.
And I'm Brett Harvey.
And it's a Brett Harvey pick today.
Yeah. Wally.
Wally.
Oh, please don't do the voice. That's cringy. Please don't do it.
You don't like it?
No.
It's cute.
I don't like it when you do it.
Wally.
Oh, that's disturbing.
I thought it was really good.
It was excellent.
Thank you.
Kind of sound a bit like E.T. at the same time as Wally.
Yeah, kind of. Wally, phone home.
That's it. It could be. It could very well be.
Yeah. Maybe it's a throwback.
Maybe.
Anyway, so let's launch into it.
All right. What, are we just going to go straight in? No intro, no banter, nothing?
Okay, I chose this movie.
You did.
Because absolutely love it. And it's the start of the show, and I usually leave my score till the end.
Uh-huh.
But look, I'm probably going to give it a 10. I'm just going to let everybody know, okay? I'm probably going to give it a 10 today because it is a brilliant movie.
It is.
Yep.
Yeah, it definitely is. I hadn't seen this movie before I met you.
Yeah.
It's just one that I missed.
Yep.
I don't know why. Probably because it came out in 2008. It was just in like a downturn in my, I suppose, movie consumption. Disney Pixar movie consumption.
And I didn't see it at the movies.
No.
My one big regret of my life. No, I don't know. I just think at the time, I thought it was a kid's movie.
It's dark.
But it's not at all. It's really, it's got a lot going for
it's
it. A lot
really
of things.
It's really dark. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
But in a fun way.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
dark, but in a fun way.
But watch it with your kids.
Yeah.
All right. This movie premiered on the 23rd of June 2008 at the Greek Theatre in Los Angeles.
There you go.
It has a runtime of 97 minutes and a current rating of 8.4 on IMDb and 95% on Rotten Tomatoes.
There you go. 95%.
Yep. They did not give it a 10.
What was what's IMDb?
8.4.
That's a really good solid score.
It is. Especially, I think IMDb is always a bit flighty because anyone can vote on it. Mm. So it's like you get people on both sides of the spectrum, people that really love it and people that, for whatever reason,
people that
have a small criticism. Yeah, people that care to vote. That's it.
So they're going to feel strongly for or against.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right, fun fact number one, Wally and R2-D2 are played by the same actor.
Really?
Yeah, so the voice of Wally is legendary sound designer Ben Burtt.
Yeah.
Burtt is best known for his work on Star Wars, so you can go ahead and thank him for R2-D2's distinctive chatter, though he has worked on films like E.T., the Extraterrestrial, and the Indiana Jones series as well.
E.T., the so there you go. He's probably done the voice for E.T.
He probably has. I didn't look that up, but you know what? It would not surprise me.
It's probably a good chance. That's great. There you go.
All right, fun fact number two. The director came up with Wally's look at a baseball game.
Oh, really?
Yes, he did. So Andrew Stanton, who is the director.
Can I have
a
guess?
Yes.
Based on someone using binoculars to look around
so
the field.
Ah! Andrew Stanton got the inspiration for Wally's design when someone handed him a pair of binoculars at a baseball game. I missed the entire inning, he recalled. I just turned the thing around and I started staring at it and I started making it go sad and then happy and then mad and then sad. And I remembered doing that as a kid with my dad's binoculars and I said, it's all there.
You know what? I did the exact same thing with my binoculars.
Did you?
Yeah. They were always a personification of a robot. So, you know, you could adjust them up and down and they had a look about them and it's exactly what they look like. Even when you have a look at the back of the head, it's almost like the rubber mounts that you put against your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there you go. And I reckon there's got to be some inspiration from the 80s. There was a movie called Short Circuit with a robot.
I haven't seen Short Circuit.
I think you've seen me watch it.
I've
you've gone, what is this stuff?
I've definitely procured Short Circuit for you, but I have not watched it myself.
And
I was probably watching Dance Moms while you were watching that. Real Housewives of somewhere.
So they have the, caterpillar tracks as articulated wheels,
mm-hmm.
Legs, limbs, which is very much Johnny Five from Short Circuit. And the face is very similar. That kind of binocular look on the face was very much Johnny Five as well. And even down to the sort of the arms and the hands, very, very, very similar. It just brings back massive memories for me because I absolutely love those movies back then.
And when did Short Circuit come out?
So it would have been like mid-80s. Maybe 86, okay. Or something like that. And they had a sequel to it, which was very good as well. So very cool. As a design, you know, they've really kind of made this cute version of a Johnny Five.
He's very cute. The design choice for Wally is... even as we go through the movies and we see these functions that Wally has and the things he can do, there were lots of moments during the movie where I went, oh, that's so cute.
I'd love to have been a fly on the wall in the design studio, you know, talking about, you know, his function as a robot, because he compacts trash inside of himself.
Yeah.
Like the back of a garbage truck does. Mm-hmm. And I just would have loved to know that what the discussion was like coming up with that idea, you know.
I wonder if they built him, like if they built a working version, but like an actual model of a scale model of him and tried different things, because you can draw something and not really get the
physicality of
or even how it's going to move or the limitations of movement based on the design. When I was doing my research, I did find that, and we're only on Fun Fact 2 here, but I did find that they said they were very clear that Wally wasn't to have elbows, because even though that would have given a whole new range of motion to him, there would be zero reason why you would build a robot with elbows for this particular function of this robot. So there he had these like sort of straight, awkward arms for everything.
Yeah. Which kind of flail around. It's very obviously flailing arms.
Yeah.
There is a guy that did make a working version of him that has the tracks that move. And I think he's got arms and the head moves as well, but I don't know any more about that. It was just a brief look on Google, but... it was life size, so I guess he used the proportions based on the movie, and it comes up to about chest height, I think, or about, just below chest height.
Really? That Wally's that big?
Yeah, he's
that big of a robot.
Because
in my head, he's quite small.
Well, let me show you a picture.
Okay.
There he is, there next to the guy on the chair.
So, but the guy is sitting in the chair.
That's right, but even when he's standing, it probably goes up to about...
waist height, I would say. Yeah,
a bit more than waist height.
Maybe a bit taller than waist height.
Yeah, just below chest height. But yeah, there you go.
He's very cute. Okay, fun fact number 3. Thomas Newman, who composed Wally's score, is the nephew of composer Lionel Newman, who just so happens to have co-scored Hello, Dolly, which appears prominently in Wally as it's Wally's favourite movie.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, wow, there you go.
Yeah, so there's the Hello, Dolly connection.
The Hello, Dolly connection.
Yeah. Not the rainbow connection. It's the Hello, Dolly connection. this is the first, fun fact number 4, this is the first Pixar film to be nominated for 6 Academy Awards. This ties it with the only other animated film to garner this many nominations, which was Beauty and the Beast.
There you go.
This is also, not one of my fun facts, but this is also the only Pixar movie to combine animation and live action.
Yeah.
Because they do have those video sequences of like the president or whoever that is.
The president of the global whatever.
Something. Of him in there, which is real film footage. But everything else is computer animated. Fun fact number 5, WALL-E stands for Waste Allocation Load Lifter Earth Class.
Yeah.
And EVE stands for Extraterrestrial Vegetation Evaluator.
There you go. Works out very well, doesn't it?
It really does. Fun fact number 6, hang on a second, let's go back a bit. Do you think that they had the name WALL-E and they had to find words that made it fit?
Well... I know that they would have wanted to make the name very unique and different from any other names out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's I think that would be important to this character, especially being futuristic and something we haven't seen before.
It's very interesting as well that they named the movie after a character, because rarely do we get that.
No.
Especially with Pixar movies.
Normally it's an adjective.
It's an adjective.
Or an adverb.
Or an adverb or something.
Frozen.
Yeah. Well, Frozen's not a Pixar film, but, you know, we've got, you know, Brave and Up and Monsters, Inc. and those sorts of things that sort of describe the movie. But this is, you know, this is the
character. What would they have called it if it was another word? Trash.
Maybe.
Trashed.
Trashed. Trashed is a great name for it. Yes, I think so.
Yeah, it doesn't have the same ring to it.
No. It could be misconstrued for a very different kind of movie.
Yeah, trash. About drinking. Yeah, there you go, Wall-E. Mm. Yeah, I wonder about that. Yeah, did they start with the name and then work backwards? And the same with Eve. Did they start with the name Eve and work backwards? Or did they come up with the descriptive words and then kind of put them together?
I don't know.
It's interesting.
Fun fact number 6. To explore the possibilities of pure visual storytelling, Andrew Stanton and the Pixar team watched every single Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton movie, both short films and features, every day during lunch for about 18 months.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I do.
So that's just to get the physical comedy.
Yeah, and how to tell a story with no speaking. No speaking whatsoever.
In that respect, it reminds me a lot of Castaway. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, spends a huge amount of the movie without there being any real talking at all, apart from Wilson and a few other bits.
Doesn't Tom Hanks sort of narrate his experience a little bit? Like, not a voiceover, but doesn't he talk a little bit even just to himself during the movie?
I haven't seen Castaway
in a really long time.
Oh, yeah. But anyway, I think that's one thing that I noticed about this. They're very similar in that they don't rely on a huge amount of dialogue in most of it. Yeah. Obviously, once he starts to interact with the humans, then there's a lot more dialogue. That's probably why it really helps to invite that sense of desolate isolation of Wall-E being the only robot in the area on the planet.
You know, it is a very quiet movie. Mm,
and it's very powerful once he activates those advertising signs and we start to hear that story unfold from the human perspective. Mm. Mm.
Fun fact number 7, the last piece of debris that clears away from Wall-E as he leaves Earth's atmosphere is the Russian satellite Sputnik. Sputnik 1, which was the first man-made object to be placed in Earth's orbit.
Yeah.
And according to this movie, it's still there.
Yeah.
It's still up there 700 years later. And last but not least, fun fact number 8, it's a Pixar movie, so you know there are a lot of Easter eggs.
Mm.
Among them, Ham the pig and Rex the dinosaur from Toy Story, plus Mike Wazowski from Monsters, Inc., can be seen in Wall-E's truck near the beginning of the film.
Oh, yeah.
Skinner's scooter from Ratatouille and the Pizza Planet truck are rusting in one of Earth's many trash heaps.
Mm.
A reference to A113, a classroom at CalArts where many Pixar animators studied, can be found in every Pixar movie, and Wall-E gave it what Stanton called its most obvious placement as the name of the directive that states humans can never go back to Earth.
Mm.
And when Wall-E creates a statue of Eve, the lamp he uses for her arm is none other than the star of Oscar-winning Pixar short Luxo Jr., so the Pixar lamp.
Yeah.
He uses to create her arm.
There you go.
Lots of little Easter eggs in this one.
Lots going on.
Lots going on. All right, shall we jump in?
Yeah, we should.
The juxtaposition of Sunday clothes with the dystopian world is such a brilliant way to start this movie.
Great use of juxtaposition.
Oh, thank you. Dystopian.
Just drop that on in.
Yeah, just drop it like a big long word in there.
Well, I've got my alternate name for this movie is Wall-E, a post-apocalyptic adventure.
Not Wall-E trashed.
Wall-E
not
gets
what
trashed.
We're calling it.
I don't know. The thing is, I think it is a post-apocalyptic adventure. Not like nuclear war, but just, you know, there's a huge environmental impact theme that runs through the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I love a good post-apocalyptic movie.
You do. The only thing that would have made this better for you if there was a zombie. If there were zombies popping out, this would be your ideal movie.
It's funny that you say that because the humans in this are kind of a bit like zombies.
They are,
in the way
not
that
on
they
the
function.
Earth. Yeah, correct.
Yeah. But we'll get to that later.
Now, I have a big soft spot for Hello Dolly because that was my first musical that I ever performed in. So I'm hearing that songs, and because it's such an old musical, one of those golden age musicals, it's not one that you hear ever.
No.
So like when you're talking about musicals, we never bring up the Hello Dolly songs, and there's a few that feature quite heavily in this one, and we hear the jaunty, jovial, put on your Sunday clothes, happy, 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 and then we see this real desolate, trash covered.
Well, the good thing is that it's recognisable as being a human city.
Yeah.
So it's clever in that respect, but it's been trashed enough that we know it's been a very long time since the humans have actually been there, inhabited that space.
Mm-hmm.
And I love how we, as we enter this space, from space is beautiful view, and we focus in on Earth, and as we get closer, you know, the camera view punches through a massive cloud of satellites that are all hovering around Earth. You know, like just
were those satellites? I thought they were rubbish.
No, it's all millions of satellites just hanging around.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, in much the same way that they're always putting satellites up into space now. Look at Starlink from Elon Musk, you know, yeah. and those things. They're always putting satellites out there to improve, you know, life on Earth. But at what stage does it become like just a mess? Mm. And so we see that mess, and that it's that little, it's like little bits of information as you go, and then we go and we focus in on what's happening down on Earth, and then we start to see kind of the silhouettes of mountains that almost look like the really vertical mountains, you know, in like places like Vietnam, and that, you know, mm-hmm. that you see those the coming up out of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And we sort of at first, you know, we're led to believe that they are mountains, but no, we see that they're piles of trash, very well stacked piles of trash, but just an overwhelming amount of trash that seems incomprehensible, really. And it's almost like a trigger warning for environmentalists, you know, like you kind of, it's quite alarming, you know. And I love this sequence at the start, the desolate city, and we come and focus in on this little Wally, you know.
Who's the only thing moving, the only thing that's there,
yeah,
and who's moving through. And I do, yeah, I love how the storytellers have dropped us in there, have given us no explanation of anything, and we're just sort of playing catch up at the start, trying to work out what's happened. Like, I've got in my notes, I have lots of questions that I then like crossed out because I had them answered as we went through. So we see, because my first question was, oh my God, who's made those massive piles? Yeah. Like, because they're very neatly stacked mountains of rubbish.
That's right.
And when I was watching, because I've never before, when we watched this time, I hadn't sat down and watched WALL-E in its entirety. I'd seen bits and pieces of it, and I knew the gist.
Yeah.
But I had never watched the whole thing. So to see the big mountains, I don't understand how have they been made. And then to see WALL-E going around and scooping up the rubbish and making cubes, and we see him building these mountains, and we think, oh, okay, I get it now. Yeah, yeah. So these big towers of rubbish, and we get a headline of a newspaper saying that Earth's covered and there's too much rubbish, and we just, but because there's no dialogue, we're just hearing the jaunty beats of Sunday Clothes, and we're trying to work all this out on our own.
Yep. We have that beautiful jaunting, you know, music.
Put on your Sunday
and
clothes.
And you know, it just, because it's such a recognisable music, you know, really. That even that style, even if you don't know Hello Dolly, you just know that that's of an era. Well, it's closer to where we are now than what the movie is set.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
You know, because I think later on we do work out that it's about 700 years.
They mention it's the 700th anniversary of the five-year cruise.
And that's even since they've left Earth.
Yeah.
So, you know.
It's 705 years.
I think I did write down somewhere.
They said days. He said 255,642 days.
Yeah.
They're up in... that they've been in space.
Yeah. Oh, the year is 2,775.
Oh, okay. So that's
So they do say the year at one point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that means it's about, what would that be, about 50 years in the future from now is when they start leaving.
Yeah.
Or when the Axiom leaves Earth.
Mm-hmm.
But you would assume that there are other ships that have left because there's other docking bays down there in where the Axiom has left.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
And we get an ad sort of... WALL-E sets off this
motion-activated...
Yeah, this motion-activated...
Like a billboard, isn't it?
Yeah, like an hologram.
Holographic billboard, yeah.
A holographic billboard explaining that the Axiom is a five-year cruise that's going to go... It's the space is the final frontier.
Yeah.
And they're going to go up and there's, like, pools and, like, it's a big cruise ship, basically, that they're going to be up there for 5 years while the robots clean up the Earth, get all the rubbish out, and then they can come back. But, of course, that didn't happen because WALL-E's the only thing there. And I love, as we are building this character, that we see that Wally's got, he's got like a grotto of treasures, like Ariel. It reminded me of the Little Mermaid. He's finding important things as he's cleaning, all things that are special to him as he's cleaning up and sort of storing them away and taking them back to his little grotto. And the moment where he doesn't know where to put the spork is really funny. He's got like the spoons and the forks and he sort of doesn't know where to put, so he lays it in between both of them. I just thought that was really cute. Yeah. And then he folds himself up and puts himself on a shelf and rocks himself to sleep and I just die. It's so cute. But then you think, how is he still working? But they solve that problem too because he's solar powered.
Yep.
We get that information as well. He's there like sunning himself
when he breaks, he collects pieces off other dead Wallys.
Yeah.
And
so he's the last one still going for whatever
reason. And he repairs himself. So we get a real sense of this character being sentient, you know, being beyond just the programming of a normal robot, but somehow he interacts with life on his own terms. Hence his appreciation for music. Hence his collecting unique and special objects. And it's interesting. I love the moment where he picks up the little wedding ring box and opens it up, and there's a diamond there, gold ring with a diamond. And he looks at it, and then he tosses it, and he keeps the box
playing with the box.
Yeah, because
our son would do that.
Yeah,
So
there's a lot of really relatable stuff like that, where you kind of question the value of things as well.
Well, value is whatever you think is special. Yeah. So in his little grotto of treasures, he's got lots of things that don't have value, like a spork.
Yeah.
Like that you would look at and they would have no value to us, but to him, they're something that's really special. And I could see why he would prefer the box, the little box, the velvet box on its hinges that makes snappy sounds and everything, rather than a sparkly rock that he doesn't care about.
Yeah, so the one thing that we pick up really early on is the by and large company, which has become, you can see, it becomes evident that it's a global company. They're responsible. They sort of have ownership over pretty much everything that's going on Earth now, or they did have.
So
we see the by and large megastore, which is very similar to like a Costco.
Yeah.
And then you've got the by and large gas and gulp, which by
like
extension
a
of a Costco is the other thing that you get as well. You get the fuel at Costco. So it mirrors that very, very well. And I know that for us in Australia, Costco's fairly new. You know, Costco's been a thing in America for a very, very long time and they're everywhere.
See, because I saw it more as like a big box store, like a Walmart.
A Target, same thing, yeah.
Or something like that that has just gotten bigger and bigger. And
then I think you mentioned before about the president, and he's like, he was the president of the by and large global corporation or something like that.
He's not the president of, because the other thing that this movie doesn't do is it doesn't give us a location. We're just sort of, we assume it's, you know, North America somewhere because of the accents and because of the sort of vibe, but it doesn't actually really tell us.
No, and it's not so important really because it could be anywhere on Earth really.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other thing that we also are introduced to is Wally's best friend, the little cockroach.
Did you notice that, like, the cockroach is the only thing that survived the apocalypse?
Yeah, so the old saying is that the only thing that would survive an atomic, event, would be the cockroaches.
And Twinkies, and they have both of those
So it's
that does really give us the North America thing too, because that's the only place that you're going to get a Twinkie.
Yeah. Yeah, and so he's got this beautiful little friend who has an equal amount of character as Wally, and they interact like best buddies and they care for each other.
Yeah,
So there's some real humanistic qualities coming from everyone but the humans in this movie.
Yeah. And Wally also, while he's looking for his treasures, finds a little green sprout, which he sort of just takes back to his little grotto.
Yeah.
And isn't really mentioned, but that it is, all accounts, the only living thing.
Yeah, the only organic
matter that's still there.
Yeah. And he recognises that it's important, but he doesn't know why.
No.
Because he's probably never seen a plant before in his life.
No.
In his working life.
It's just another one of his treasures that he's
got. Yeah, but we also get the sandstorm, the dust storm coming in too, which
is a regular thing apparently. Yeah.
Yeah, so he goes and they go and hide inside his little truck.
Little bunker.
Yeah, his little grotto.
His little grotto.
Yeah, and I think There's some things happening in here that remind me of other movies. Like, there's a movie called Idiocracy, where they think it's set 500 years in the future. And one of the things that they also talk about as well is that with the breakdown of society, and one of the indicators of, like, the success of a community and society is the ability to get rid of their own waste products. So in Idiocracy, they basically lose, through generations of dumbing down, they lose the ability to actually get rid of their rubbish effectively. And that becomes a very similar problem. They have just huge piles of rubbish that they don't know what to do with. We do see this in many parts of the world. I mean, rubbish is a constant thing that communities deal with all the time. And for a lot of us, we're pretty lucky. We don't even have to think about it. We just chuck it in the bin and that's it. But, you know, there's a lot of places around the world where they don't have the systems for getting rid of rubbish like we do in Australia and, you know, America and those sorts of things. And they end up just, again, piling it up.
Burning
it. Burning it. Chuck it in the waterways, you know. So, and it's very, very, very destructive, you know. So,
I don't know what we'd do. What would we do if we didn't have the rubbish man come?
Yeah.
We have to take, oh, you know what? I actually had this conversation with some people at work. So I'm a teacher, if you're listening and you don't know, and I teach in regional country Victoria. And one of my colleagues years ago, we were talking about, I don't know what we're talking about, rubbish maybe?
Yeah.
And she had mentioned that the rubbish truck doesn't come to her house.
Yeah.
Because she's too far out.
Yeah.
Too far rural. Out for, yeah, rural, like proper, like in the bush, yeah?
Yeah.
And that blew my mind. I was like, what do you mean the rubbish truck doesn't come to your house? She's like, yeah, well, we're not in town, so the rubbish truck doesn't come. I'm like, what do you do? Well, they just pile the rubbish onto the truck, whatever, and then once a month or whatever, they take it to the tip. They take it to a local, like a drop-off point.
Or they bury and burn it.
Like. Yeah, but, like, that's bizarre to me. But they also have, a fireplace, so a lot of the rubbish can go in there in the wintertime or whatever. But that blew my mind, because that is something, coming from somebody that grew up in the suburbs, that is something that I never even considered. Doesn't the rubbish man go to everyone's house? That's bizarre to me. Or that people, that the postman doesn't come to people's houses.
Yeah.
Like, they can't get mail. They need post boxes because the postman won't come all the way out to their house.
Yeah.
That is mind-boggling. I don't know. Is that your parents?
Yeah, so my parents.
They live in country.
They actually live really close to town, but you have to drive around a hill to get there.
Yeah.
So they don't deliver mail out there to their place.
But they have the rubbish man comes out there.
No, it doesn't.
Not right to his house.
No, they have to drive their bins about 2 kilometres up the road, and they have to leave their bins on the side of a main road.
Oh,
and the rubbish man comes to there.
And we complained about taking it out to taking the bin out on bin night to the letterbox. Yeah. Goodness.
Another movie that comes to mind is a more recent movie is The Joker, because that's one of the things we see in the city. There's a build-up of rubbish on the streets because, you know, their city government isn't, I guess, I think it's something to do with, you know, they're not paying for the rubbish removal or something effectively, or there's a strike, or, you know, and so there's huge piles of rubbish everywhere on the streets.
If the rubbish people decided that they were going to strike.
Strike, yeah.
The world would stop. genuinely.
Yeah, yeah.
Just imagine, just even 1 week.
Yep.
Of no rubbish pickup. Like, we were struggling after Easter. Our bin was full, and, you know. And just imagine if they just decided not. Like, we went to New York fairly recently, pre-COVID, in 2019. And I love New York. It's my favourite place in the world. But one thing that is very different from how we sort of function here is that people at businesses leave their rubbish on the street, like in big garbage bags, sort of just pile it up on the street, and then every day the bin man comes along and collects it, and then it's clear in the morning. And in the evenings, if you're walking the streets in the evenings late at night, it's like mountains of rubbish. This is in Manhattan, in the inner city, and then in the morning it's gone.
Yeah.
So someone's come and picked it up. But that's not how things happen in Melbourne, where we live. But it sort of is a bit like, if one day, just one day in New York, in Manhattan, the rubbish people decided not to pick up the rubbish.
Yeah. There'd be big problems.
Like, there'd be huge problems.
Mm.
Like, the sidewalks would be, they'd be covered with 2 days worth of, 2 days worth of rubbish. Anyway.
Yeah, going back to Wally.
Back to the movie.
So, people, we're here to talk about Wally the movie.
Not about sustainability, but that is also a really big thing.
One of the things I also noticed is, you know, talk about rubbish, because it is a big part of this movie. There aren't many cars, I think, in the city, like, you know, leftover cars, but there is, at one stage, there's a really big pile of car tires.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of...
You can't crush those.
Well, it's kind of a reminder that there are some things that just don't break down, you know, and you can't really crush them and make them into, you know, cubes. And
you can recycle car tires, can't you?
It takes a lot of energy and it usually makes a lot of pollutants as well.
But do they like... So what happens to all the car tires? Like,
what, in Australia or in the world?
Like, when my car needs new tires.
They put them in big piles. They stack them up.
Put them where?
Well, there's places and they... That's why it costs so much. If you take tyres to the tip here and try and dispose of them, it's something like 20 or 30 bucks a tyre or something if you want to take them, yeah. That's why when you get new tyres, part of the cost that they...
Is disposal
of the old ones,
okay,
yeah.
Right.
But, yeah, anyway, so... But what, to me, that's like a real big statement about there are just some things that don't biodegrade, you know.
So there are a few, there's probably, I think, like 4 main events in this movie. We have the start where we meet Wally and we're sort of introduced to the world that he's currently living in. So event number 1. And then event number 2, we have another character come and join him.
Yeah.
So for all intents and purposes, Wally's been by himself. With his little cockroach for 700 years, and then we have another robot that arrives and she's very shy.
Very sleek, advanced
robot. She's very fast. She's very destructive.
She can
fly. She
shoots
at everything. She flies. She shoots.
Yeah.
And she is very clearly looking for something.
Mm.
She's going around and scanning everything and, it's, you know, not finding what she's looking for, and then she moves on. And Wally's following her around.
Absolutely. He's following her around like a lost puppy.
He's enamored with her straight away. He just thinks she's wonderful.
Yeah.
And she's looking. And then they have this sort of like introductions after she's shot at him and everything. And she notices a funny
sequence of misadventures.
Yeah. So she notices, though, that he's following her.
Yeah.
And she just sort of ignores him. She doesn't care. Like, she shoots at him, notices
he's not what she's
him.
Looking for.
He's not a threat. And off she goes. And eventually the dust cloud comes again and he takes her to his hideout.
They talk about their directive as well. And
she tries a lot of languages. Directive before she gets to English. Yeah.
So, you know, his directive is to compact trash. Simple as that. Nothing more, nothing less.
Mm-hmm.
Her directive is classified. She can't tell him.
She can't tell him, no.
So we still don't know. Dun, dun, dun.
And he takes her to his little grotto and she's wrecking everything. And
well, she gets to explore these interesting things that she's never seen before.
Yeah, you know? And she's knocking things over and everything. And eventually we land on the plant.
Yeah.
And she scans it. She turns green.
Yeah.
That's what she's looking for. Like her little front
hatch
opens up and in it goes and she just powers down. That's it. She almost like dies.
Yeah.
There's like a flash and she powers down.
Mm.
And then he's trying to like wake her up. I'm waiting for her. And and then it's so cute, this little montage of him taking her places.
Yeah.
It was almost like Weekend at Bernie's.
Yeah.
He's like taking her around, showing her these different things and waiting for her to wake up. And it's almost like it's really heartbreaking because he's finally got this friend and she's not, well, she's not dead, but like for all intents and purposes, she's dead.
Mm.
And he's sort of not letting her go and taking her places. And
yep.
And then the ship comes back to get her
to
pick her up and sucks her up. And
that's when we go on to like...
This is like phase number 3.
Yeah.
Where Wally hooks onto this ship and he's going to.
Yeah.
Which is a smaller ship that then takes them to the Axiom.
And the his little cockroach friend misses out on the joyride.
Unfortunately for
him. And he's, so Wally's, on the side of this... this spaceship, and they fly, you know, for quite a while through the stars, and he kind of interacts with, you know, like the space dust and a few other things, and there's these beautiful images of the outer space, you know, planets and so forth, that, you know, you can tell they've done their research on that and what these nebula look like and these the stars and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, and I suppose you don't have the limitations of needing him to be able to breathe.
No.
Like, so it doesn't matter. Like, no. Because you'd be concerned if a person was flying through space without any gear on or anything, but he's a robot. Mm. He's fine. Yeah. He just flies on through, and I suppose the only real danger there is that there's no sun.
Mm.
So later, and that does become an issue for him later, that yeah. he can't recharge himself the same way that the other robots can. There's quite a lot of physical humour in this next... phase three or wherever we are now. So when they first get there, Eve is taken to be cleaned and they try and clean Wally too, but he's sort of not letting them, and the poor little robots, the little cleaning robots, because there's robots for everything on the Axiom.
Well, the thing that we see first are the robots, and we don't see any humans for quite a while. And I think that's designed to sort of, you start to question, well, where are the humans?
Where are the people?
Because there's all these robots. It's all robots.
But someone sent her to get this plant, to look for plant matter, so they have to be there somewhere. And when you first get that look at the people, it's quite a confronting thing because they are really...
obese.
Obese, yes, also. But I think when I was doing my research on this, I read that when they did a lot of research on what happens to people in space and... Yes, they're obese because they're not really moving around, but also your body when you're in space changes, and your
bones, muscles atrophy a bit,
and your bones become
fragile. Yeah,
yeah. So that's why people can't stay in space for too long. It's a real thing.
I think it's to do with the bones. Marrow loses its ability to absorb calcium, and so when they come out of space, even after a short time. You know, if they've only been up there for a week or so and they come back, you know, they can't walk straight away and they have to go through physical therapy.
Absolutely.
And we sort of see that later on when it's time to go back to Earth, and the president has a pre-recorded speech, and he says, very jokingly, very whimsically, he says, now over time, your body will have changed. Something like that.
And we see that with the captain's pictures on the wall too, the difference.
Yeah, they go from
fit,
contemporary
healthy,
humans to very obese as well.
Yeah.
Over the course of the hundreds of years, generationally.
The animators initially wanted to make the humans like amorphous blobs. Not recognizable as humans, whereas the people in this movie are still clearly human.
Yeah.
They didn't want them to look human because they felt like after 700 years in space, they wouldn't look like that.
Yeah,
but
true.
Test audiences and stuff, they went, we can't. We've got to. They were like very disturbing looking.
Yeah.
That.
I'd love to see some pictures of that.
Yeah, so it was a bit full on. But everybody, all the humans are looking at a screen. No one's interacting with each other. They're just talking to the screen.
If you go back to early on when we see the advertisement at the start, the hologram, they talk about the Axiom, and we see a family standing there next to a grandmother sitting on one of these floating beds.
Yeah.
And so what's it sort of saying is that even someone who's not very mobile can still get around on the Axiom because we've got these special floating beds.
Yeah.
But what we see when we get there is that every single person has one. Of any age, they're all in these floating beds, every single one of them. And they're actually cruising around on, like, almost like doing laps.
Yeah. Because it's a running track. Yeah, they said there's a running track there you can keep up. There's a
pool. We didn't know it was a running track.
Yeah. When Wally disturbs one of the girls.
He bumps into the guy first.
Yeah, he bumps into the guy and knocks him off the chair. And the guy's, like, rolling around on his back like a turtle.
Yeah.
And he can't get up. And it's really sort of upsetting to see. Like, I think it's meant to be funny. I didn't really find it funny. I thought it was, like... A bit horrible. I just don't know. It was just like the helplessness of the people, and it was just kind of like it was very like my 600-pound life. I just felt really sad for them.
Yeah,
really sad for the people.
I mean, I think that's the idea too.
Yeah.
Is that we kind of see what these humans have kind of been reduced to.
Yeah.
Part of it's look. The question is it. Is it their fault of their own, or is it previous generations have caused things to go that way.
Yeah.
You know, because anybody who's born on the Axiom, which we're presuming that all of them have been
all
born
of
on
these,
the Axiom,
yeah,
you know,
all of these people,
they're born into a life that they didn't create.
Yeah.
And a lifestyle that they never created.
Yeah.
And this lifestyle revolves around high levels of inactivity,
mm-hmm.
and a constant diet of liquid foods,
mm-hmm.
which they don't have any real control over at all about what they're eating and putting into their bodies. And they're constantly distracted by technology that is designed to just keep them occupied and busy. You know, they've got their own little hologram TV screen in front of their face as they float around.
This was made 15 years ago, this movie. 15 years.
Yeah. To me, it's a real big statement about the traps of technology.
Yeah.
I wrote in capitals and I underlined it with an exclamation mark, Black Mirror moment.
Yeah.
And it says, by and large is your best friend. Try lunch in a cup. So, you know, these people are born into this lifestyle.
Yeah.
And technology has reduced them down to just the very bare minimum of what humans are capable of doing.
Mm-hmm.
They're completely
pacified.
They're
just keeping them alive. They're alive.
They are keeping them alive. And that, and you know, that sort of becomes part of the antagonism later on between the humans, the, you know, the captain and Ordo, who's the autopilot for the ship,
yeah.
is that Ordo has a very strict set of functions,
yeah.
directives to perform.
Yeah.
And one of them is to keep all of the people alive and keep the place functioning.
Yeah.
And so in many ways, it's much easier to keep the humans pacified and alive than to have them have the ability to choose outside of a very narrow set of goals or ideas.
But also the humans are not seeing any further than that screen that's in front of them. Even though there's stuff happening around them, they don't even see it.
Yep.
They're not interacting with each other. And when Wally accidentally like disables the screen in front of that woman, who is sort of becomes the human that we then follow for the different parts of the movie, she sort of is sort of knocked off her track in front of a window, and she sees the swimming pool where there has nobody there. No one's in the swimming pool.
Well, she's sort of around it, but not interacting with the pool.
And she's like, I didn't know we had a pool.
Yeah.
Like she didn't know it was there. It was right in front of her, but because they've got these screens in front of their faces, they don't see it.
And we sort of, this gets doubled down later on when we see a preschool full of babies all sitting in little hover chairs, all wearing the same clothing, the kind of
little red jumpsuits. They can make them blue.
They've
too.
They've all got a pacifier, like literally being pacified, a pacifier in their mouth, and they're all looking at the by and large holographic screen.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just not a future you'd want to see for yourself or for anybody.
Yeah. And they talk about like speed dating and that they've been speed dating on these.
Yeah.
On these screens, but nobody's talking to anyone.
Yeah.
Wally's still following Eve because she's being sent somewhere and he's following her, and they end up in the captain's room where we find out that they can go home now. Eve brings him the plant, which shows an evidence of photosynthesis happening back on Earth again, and that they can go home.
Mm.
And I think the captain's really sort of, he's first of all very taken aback by this because it would be a very scary thing.
Well, he has no idea what Earth was like. He doesn't know what plants are.
No.
You know, he just knows that whatever this is, it's important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he does some research and you can see him like Googling basically and watching videos. And he sees people dancing and he sees,
people,
you know, rivers
food
and trees.
And like proper food, not just out of a cup.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's asking like questions like, what is dancing? And, you know, because he doesn't know any of these
what
words.
What is Earth?
Yeah. So now we've got these two storylines going of the humans and we've got Wally and Eve. The plant goes, you know, this as the movie goes on, you know, I'm just conscious of time. We've been talking about a lot of the deeper issues in this. But, you know, we have, you know, a lot of there's like chases and they lose
classic,
the plant for a bit.
Classic Disney chase.
Yeah, they lose plant for a bit and then the
they get it back and then
they
lose
it back
and
then they lose it again and they don't know who's got it or where it's gone, and then the robots all turning on each other and
There's a great sequence too with the rogue robots that Wally releases accidentally, you know, and they kind of create a gang that supports Wally. Yeah. You know, like they all befriend Wally because he's let them go free.
But, you know, at the end of the day, the robots don't want them to go home.
No.
Because actually the directive that's come from the by and large guy, corporation leader, is that we're not going home. So he's made like two different videos, one for the captain when they eventually, if they ever eventually find plant life, and one for the robots for Ordo, saying basically, we're not going home. You do whatever you need to do to keep them up there.
Yeah.
Because I suppose, I wonder where the by and large ship is, like where all these people are.
So is Axiom the only ship left? What happened to all the other humans on Earth? Where are their ships? Where are they at, you know? Because I think at one stage it does sort of say that Axiom is the last ship to leave or something like that.
Yeah.
The final frontier.
The final frontier.
Frontier, sorry. Yeah, so inference is that other ships have left already. And, you know, like I said earlier on, there's docking stations for multiple ships. So, yeah, it's like the question is, where are they?
Mm.
Where are these other ships? You know, are they in the same galaxy? Are they the same solar system? Have they been destroyed? Like
galaxy far, far away.
Do they not have contact with these other ships? You know, what's going on?
Yeah, because you would assume that the by and large corporation still exists 700 years later. So that one guy wouldn't still be alive, but someone's running the by and large corporation from wherever they are. So, it's just questions. There are bigger Wallies, the Wallars. That are in the bowels of the ship, their big trash compactors. I thought that was quite cool.
And once again, what do they do with the trash? They send it out into space.
Yeah, they just shoot it off.
That's what people do. You know, like,
I thought that was cool. And throughout the whole of the movie, we just see that Wally just wants to be with Eve and he just wants to hold her hand.
Yeah.
Because that's what he saw the characters doing in Hello, Dolly, holding hands. And he just wants to hold her hand and
he just wants to feel love.
Connection. He wants a connection and he feels like we see sort of Eve softening to him as the movie as the movie continues as well.
And they do there's this lovely sequence when they're outside of the ship because Ordo has sent one of his little robots down to put the plant in an escape pod. And send it back. to Earth. And Wally gets on board and he's shot out into space. Eve goes after him. Anyway, they both end up outside the ship and they end up dancing in among the stars together.
And they sort of kiss.
Yeah.
She sort of kisses, puts her head against his and there's a little spark. Yeah. That like little static electricity spark. It's very cute.
So it's a love story and a post-apocalyptic love story.
It really is. And then when we come in back to the ship, we see that the lady that we had been following, the one that saw the pool, she's, like, playing in the pool.
Yeah.
Now.
And yeah, with the guy.
They're still in their chairs, they're splashing in the pool and, you know, they're having human connection. I think this
and
movie
And they might
is,
not even know what water is, like,
no,
really.
I think, well, they've been drinking it, but
well, that they've been, that they can splash in it, you know.
Yeah, so really the whole basis of this movie is just about connection, about the need for connection and making connections with other people.
And that, you know, that technology, when used improperly, can sever that connection.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And we can become slaves to that technology.
But even the people that are on the technology, they're still searching for connections. Mm. You know, they're looking for, they're trying to date people. They're video chatting through the TVs with people that are next to them.
Yeah.
You know, so they're still trying to find that connection, but it's like they've lost the ability to look outside of that.
So we're on to like phase 20 or something. But the final phase.
The final phase.
The final frontier is that they do return back to Earth.
Yeah.
And they go into their hyper jump and they shoot back towards Earth. And by this stage, Wally's just about dead.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, he was crushed. He was broken.
He was crushed. And so, and he's kind of powering down and he's not looking so good. And so Eve knows that she needs to get him back to Earth.
And she's also seen like a montage of what happened when she had been powered down.
Yeah.
Of she's him, seen
him looking after
her. Yeah, him looking after her, and taking care of her and showing her things and she's going to do the same thing for him now. It's really heartbreaking when he wakes up and he just sort of goes back into autopilot. Like he's just making the piles and sorting the piles and doing all that. And you know, and he's crushing his treasures. He's in his hideout and he's crushing the things that he's worked so hard to collect because he's been sort of rebooted and he doesn't have those that personality anymore.
No, because his chip got fried.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we get this kind of resolution at the end with Eve and Wally. Wally does come to eventually, which is wonderful.
happy ending.
but then also you've got all of the humans that start to make their way out of the ship to discover that Earth is not like the captain saw in the videos.
No.
But, you know, they're there. They should be there is kind of what he's sort of saying.
Yeah, this is where we belong. Where we should belong.
Yeah. So he plants this one little tiny plant on this desolate surface. So you know that it's the start of something, whatever that thing might be, but, you know, it might be the recolonization of Earth.
Yeah, and you see the people walking off the ship. I think that's really important, that they're not, you know, sitting in
they're
their little...
They're not completely incapacitated.
No, but they're walking off the ship. Yeah. I wonder how they learned to walk, this is my question. If nobody's walking on this ship, when that happened, when they learned how to walk?
Well, the president jokingly says, you know, you may have experienced some bone loss, but there's nothing that a few laps around the running track won't fix, you know? And it's like, this is 700 years of human de-evolution.
They're doing laps of the running track.
So it's quite, and that's the thing about this movie is it is so deep with social commentary, but at the same time, so funny.
Yeah.
You know, it's dark, but it's also very, very light at the same time.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, they've pulled off a bit of a miracle to be able to do that so, so well. There's nothing about this movie that I don't like. You know, I think we're starting to wrap things up, you see. So, but yeah, there's nothing about this that I don't like. I think everything is just so well crafted. And it may be, in my opinion, one of Pixar's best movies of all time. Because it's, again, it's so, like, it's so deep.
Yeah, I think that this is probably one of the most underrated Pixar movies. Like when we talk about just the storytelling capabilities of Pixar, we hear a lot about Up gets spoken of a lot, which it definitely deserves because Up is a beautiful, beautiful movie. And, you know, we have the great success that has been the Toy Story franchise. But Wall-E is one that probably doesn't get mentioned as often.
No.
I wouldn't think. Like, it's not one that I hear about. Particularly, there's no why is there not a Wall-E at Epcot?
I don't know.
Epcot, which is about the future and technology and progress, why does Wall-E not exist there? That's where he belongs. He needs he should be at Epcot or at least at Tomorrowland in Magic Kingdom. Like he should be scooting around in there and you know, picking up rubbish and petition for Disney to put Wall-E in.
Yeah, there needs to be Wall-E World.
It's a National Lampoon thing. You can't tell me that you can't have a little animatronic Wall-E that's just gonna like scoot, like drive around.
It could even
be controlled. It could even be controlled by like on a phone by a cast member that can just sort of beep him around and make him move and.
Get onto it, honey. Write a letter.
I should write a letter. Okay, so then how many cockroaches do you give this movie? I already know cockroaches? Your answer.
Oh, it's got to be 10.
10? 10 out of 10?
Yeah, for sure. How many little vegetation-filled gumboots would you give it?
I'm going to say 9.
9?
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 9.
Wow. That means it comes out as a 9.5, which would be one of our highest
rated. One of our highest rated?
Yeah.
Did it beat the Lizzie McGuire movie? No, I'm kidding. We love Lizzie. We love Lizzie.
Did it beat the Lizzie McGuire movie by a very, very large margin?
We love Lizzie. I'm so sorry, Lizzie. We love you.
So I think we had Encanto had a flat out 10 from us, and it would sit just below Encanto, but above Coco and Toy Story and Tangled on 9.25.
Oh.
So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, well, see, I don't think it's a perfect movie. Maybe it is. It's a very good movie. But, like, I think Encanto...
It's so rewatchable.
It is rewatchable. But, like, Encanto and Frozen, for me, they are perfect movies. Whereas I'm not sure that this one...
This movie...
It's very good.
This movie is confronting in an unsettling way. You know, you mentioned it being dark.
That's dark.
What I think it is. I think it's very deliberately confronting and unsettling because... There's some real truths there that we don't like to really think about.
It could happen.
Like, absolutely. In some ways, it's already happening.
Yeah. Maybe not that everybody up in space in a big cruise ship in the sky for 700 years.
But our effects on our planet and what we do on the day-to-day with the amount of rubbish we create and the impact it has on the environment is something that we are already... And for a long time, been dealing with.
And I think that if this movie just makes you be a little bit more mindful of the amount of rubbish that you create,
or what you do with it,
or what you do, and how you dispose of it, I think that that's got to be a positive thing.
I think that
for the world at large.
Yeah, I think that the difference between what happens in this movie, or what's happened in this movie, and where we're at is that. You know, we haven't got to the tipping point yet, but there's obviously a point where there's such a devastating impact on the environment that there's no return.
Mm.
You know, that's the fear. We talk about global warming and stuff like that, but it's that tipping point where we can't go back.
Yeah.
You know, once we log so many trees and we're not going to be able to replace them quickly enough for our needs, you know. Once we start running out of fossil fuels and the demand is still there but the supply isn't, like the massive impacts on a world scale, you know, all of those things. And one thing we haven't mentioned, but in Wall-E, the world doesn't have any water. You know, this city is on the side of an ocean. Like it's a beachside city, you know, so it probably is something like a New York or something that's pretty close to the ocean. And there's no water there whatsoever. And so the devastation that's been created is going to be so difficult to undo. Mm. Mm. Anyway.
Nice light-hearted note to finish on.
Oh, it just gives me goosebumps thinking about how good this movie does it.
Yeah.
You know, because
it's to not
get
preachy.
You feeling that way. But
and you know
what?
It's not preachy. It's no one's on their soapbox saying, and this is how we should do. It just sort of lays everything out
It almost presents it like facts. This is what's happened.
This is what is happening. You know?
Yeah.
And this is what has happened in this world. And it lays it all out without it getting, without it feeling.
And it doesn't blame people. It doesn't, you know, put blame on a government or a group of people or anything like that. Leaves it up to us to kind of interpret in that way.
Yeah, and I guess it just sort of points out that when you have people acting mindlessly, and that is what is happening in all aspects of this movie, with the rubbish creation, with the people staring at their screens, and like everything is just happening on autopilot, you know, no pun intended, and mindlessly.
Yep.
That these are the traps that you can fall into.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, you're right, it doesn't... I know that there are people that have spoken about this movie and have said, you know, it's fat-shamey and everything, and I don't think it's that at all. I think it's made a really good point of it's not blaming the humans for how they look, and it does definitely point out that this is the effects of being in space for a really long time. That
that's what happens, you know. But it also, that scientifically speaking, that's what happens to the body through severe inactivity and a diet that is too many calories for the amount of energy that's expended.
Yeah.
Like you can't defy science, you know. So I agree there. This is not about body shaming.
No.
This is what happens to the body, to the human body. Not just physically though, it's also emotionally and psychologically.
Absolutely.
When these things happen, you know, that's what happens. We know about emotional isolation and the impacts on mental health. We know about the distraction of technology and how it can really take us away from
living in the moment.
You're living in the moment and also being in control and aware of what goes into our body and what we do with our body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think it's far more about that than simply about shaming people for being fat. So
no, you know, and it doesn't shame the characters in the movie at all. No. Like, it's not even something that, you know, if anything, we're pitying them. We're not laughing at them. No. It's not a joke.
No.
The way that, you know, the way that the characters look, and so often when you have really sort of overweight characters in a movie, they're the butt of a joke.
But they're also a minority as well. Yeah. In this, they're everyone's all the same.
Fat. Yeah.
There's no difference.
Yeah, no. And they're not a joke, and it's just sort of taken... I feel like it's taken seriously.
Yeah.
And I think that it's done really, really well.
Yeah, out of all the jokes in this movie, I don't think that that's one of them.
No. At all. No, yeah. Not at all.
Yeah.
That's from my point of view anyway.
Yeah, I'm totally on board with that. Because I think too that people who would get offended by that and say, oh, it's fat shaming or it's body shaming, I don't think that they're looking at it with the right lens. If it's making any statements at all, it's not about that part of human existence.
No, the how the characters look is a byproduct of everything else that's happened in the story.
Exactly.
It's not they look this way and so this has happened. It is all these things have happened and this is how humanity has ended.
And in fact, if anything, like we said before, it's not even a matter of choice.
No.
They haven't chosen this.
No.
And
it's been done to them.
It's been done to them. And it kind of circles back more to this is the bad impact of the power of large corporations who don't ultimately have the humans' best interests at heart. Like, okay, so they're keeping them alive, like you said, but they're not really living.
No, they're not.
And the other thing too is, it's really difficult to trust a corporation who's destroyed the Earth.
Yeah.
They have been the big corporation on Earth. They have destroyed the Earth and they've sent people elsewhere. You can't exactly trust that their motivations are, you know, what's the word? Not honourable, but, you know.
Their intentions are pure.
Yeah, but they're not there to look after the environment and people who live in it. It's about control and it's about money making.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Anyway.
Final thoughts.
Oh, great movie. Great movie. Watch it with your kids.
They won't get it, but you can watch it.
No,
with
the good, that's the good They'll thing. Get the this cute operates bit. On so many levels.
It really does.
They'll get what they want to get out of it, which is a lot of fun, slapstick comedy,
and
engaging
that we need to
characters.
Take care of the world.
Yep. And as an adult, you'll see lots more themes going on, and you can interpret it the way you want to interpret it.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for this was a much darker episode than we normally have. But thank you for tuning in and listening in with us. Apologies if you heard any sort of crying. Our dog is our little beautiful spoodle menace, Sunny, is screaming outside. Because he wants to
let
back in.
He's not screaming. He's whimpering.
He's whinging.
He's saying, I'd prefer to be inside.
With you and not out here listening to you talk. So apologies if you can hear any sooking throughout the episode.
That's our dog, not our son.
Not our son. thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow us on social media now that we've just been talking about the awful things about technology. Please use it to follow us on Facebook and Instagram and TikTok. We are at Presenting Pixie Dust on everything except TikTok. We're at Presenting Pixie Dust Pod on TikTok. So make sure that you go and follow us there. You can listen to Brett's other podcast, Teaching for Dummies, wherever you get your podcasts. And please make sure that you subscribe and
like
and rate and review and do all of those things to help people find the podcast if you're enjoying the show. If you've got any suggestions about movies that you'd like to see covered or topics you'd like to see covered, please slide into our DMs and let us know.
Yeah, yeah.
Got anything else you want to say?
No, all good.
Oh, I'm all talked out. We'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Bye.